Warning. The following broadcast may contain material that some people may find offensive. It contains references to reading and books. Viewer discretion is advised.
This is CA Live.
Intro music, a little bit of a theme, and so we begin. Welcome everybody to the premiere episode of CA Live. For those of you who don't know what this is, and you shouldn't because it's the premiere episode, this is actually the official, and I'm using my fingers in quotes, the official podcast for Combat Advantage. And if you don't know what Combat Advantage is, boy, wow, we're off to a rocky start. Combat Advantage, or CA as we like to call it, is actually the name of a little free zine that we put out here at Emerald Press at PDF Publishing. And we are focusing specifically on independent 4th edition. Now, by independent, I mean anyone other than Wizards of the Coast that's putting out rules, material, campaign settings, any kind of goody-goody stuff for 4th edition. And that is what we are going to be focusing on. You can call me the Warden. I will be your host here for every single episode of CA Live. And if you need to know my real name, it's Todd Crapper. I am the editor-in-chief for the Combat Advantage magazine and also the head honcho for Emerald Press PDF Publishing. And let's take a little minute here to kind of clear some things up, because you did hear that correctly. My last name is Crapper. C-R-A-P-P-E-R. It's spelled exactly like it sounds. And it sounds as horrible as it's spelled. So that's why we're going to go with the Warden, because it's much cooler. And in case anyone wants to know, because it's a frequent question that I like to ask people when I interview them, where they get the names of their publishing companies and where screen names and that kind of thing came from, the Warden was actually the name of an all-encompassing villain from my old homebrew campaign, which I called Shadow World. Nowhere near related to the other game that was released by Iron Crown, if I remember correctly. The Warden was an all-encompassing villain who basically called the shots on every possible conceivable thing that happened to the PCs within my old homebrew campaign. And it's a name that actually really kind of stuck with me, so that's what we're going to use here, because it's a hell of a lot cooler than my real name, which, you know, after a while I get a little used to it. Yeah, I've had opportunities to change it, but, yeah, you know, whatever. Like, you know what, let's not talk about it, because it just brings up nasty, horrible childhood memories as I try so desperately to block them out without developing a drug addiction. So, let's carry on to our little show. We got a really good show for you this time out. For the very first one, I wanted to pull something big out of the bag. So, we have an interview with Russell Morrissey from EN World. You probably know him as Morris. He's the guy that's calling the shots on that site, as well as EN Publishing. They've been hard at work on the War of the Burning Sky campaign saga for 4th edition. They've been slowly converting it bit by bit and providing it actually for their community supporters, to which actually we at Combat Advantage are big fans of, and so we like to pitch in by donating our issues to their supporters as well. They've also been working on something else called Space Fight, so we're going to be talking to Russ in just a couple of minutes. You can listen to that. We've also got a couple other goodies here. We're going to read a couple of things from our bulletin board. The bulletin board basically being people who are, you know, looking for some help, some open calls that might be out there, you know, people who are looking for some feedback, some play testing, some beta testing. So we'll read off a couple of those that we have for you. And then because we've also got CA15, the 15th issue of Combat Advantage, that's going to be coming out just a week from the release of this podcast. We're going to give you a little bit of a preview, and I can tell you right now, we've got some big news coming up for it. We've got a nice little surprise, something that's worked out, and I think actually you guys might be able to enjoy that. So let's get started with the very first thing. Probably, let's admit it, the main reason why you guys downloaded this podcast, unless it was accidental and you were looking for some kind of a cooking show and you got this by accident. Let's go to the interview with Russell Morrissey. Cue sound effect.
We interrupt this podcast for an interview.
If you haven't heard of Ian World, I have no idea how you found out about this podcast. Russell Morrissey is also known as Morris, and he runs EN World and EN Publishing. EN World is the largest unofficial D&D fan site that exists. It's been going on for 10 years now. They're just celebrating their first decade in action. He's also running EN Publishing, which publishes the War of the Burning Sky campaign saga for 3.5 and 4th edition. He's also working on a little personal project of his called Spaceflight. And we had a little chat with him recently just to find out what's been going on with the site, what's coming up, and even to talk a little bit about the Ennie Awards. Okay, thanks for joining us, Russ. And how about we start off, how about you give us a little introduction about yourself and EN World and EN Publishing and all the goody good stuff that you work on.
Okay then, well, my name's Russ Morrissey, and you may know me as Morris. I run EN World, EN Publishing, and DNEs, and a few other bits and pieces like Service and Maximus. What did you want to know exactly then? Or do you just want a big long spiel?
Okay, yeah, let's go for the big long spiel. Let's go for the intro.
The big long spiel! Excellent. Okay, well, you're probably familiar with EN World, which is a large D&D community website. I've been running that for 10 years now, nearly.
Yep.
It was our 10th anniversary this year. EN Publishing is a small branch of that, which I use to publish primarily PDF products, but we do some print-on-demand stuff as well. We've been running that for about 8 or 9 of those 10 years. We did very, very well during the 3.5 era. We're currently producing our big campaign setting, Adventure Path, War of the Burning Sky for 4E. We did that originally for 3.5, and we're completely rewriting it. Because obviously you can't just change over monster stats and things like that and expect it to work. So we're starting pretty much from scratch, and rewriting it and re-releasing it for 4E.
Nice. How is that going anyways with the 4E conversion? Like you were just mentioning, just the amount of work obviously that goes into those kind of conversions. Is it a lot more than you expected, or is it something
it
where...
It turned out to be an awful lot more work than we expected. I think when we first thought of the idea, and this is probably before 4E came out, we didn't realise quite how much work the conversion was going to be. Originally we thought, oh, well, we'll need to change some monster stats, maybe rewrite one or two encounters, and, you know, we'll be there. But 4E is so different that you really have to completely rewrite the modules. So essentially, we're pretty much writing sort of 60 to 100,000 words every month, again, from scratch. Plus we're getting new art and things like that, just to spice up the 4E adventures.
Yeah, to give it a little more punch with that.
Yeah, well, we've got a little bit more money lying around these days, so we can afford some more colour art and things like that. And it's been really successful as well. People really have been picking it up, more so than they ever did with 3.5. Getting an awful lot of feedback. People are loving it everywhere. So we're really, really happy.
Oh, really? I'm actually kind of surprised by that, because I would have thought, as probably everyone knows, your 3.5 work was hugely successful. Like, your tournament fairs and taverns is probably one of the biggest, most well-known PDF products that were out there, so...
Yeah, that was at the top of the best sellers for, it must have been months. I think it was about 9 or 10 months it was sitting there.
Yeah.
That was very, very early in the PDF times. There were only sort of 40 or 50 PDF companies at the time, and now there's thousands, aren't there? So it's a lot more difficult these days.
Yeah, well, I think that's actually a little bit of a surprise with the 4E. Now... how involved are you in the process? Is it more so where you basically sent out the email, hired various people to work on it, and then they just keep you up to date, or, you know...
Pretty much. I oversee it. I'm kept in touch on stages and offer comments and so forth. Writing is not my strength at all. I wouldn't dream of sitting down and trying to write an adventure. But I have found some great people. Ryan Knopp, who originally wrote it, the entire 3.5 series, is a fantastic writer, and a chap called Steve Mutrow is converting it for us, rewriting it for us, and he's very, very good also. So what happens is They sort of send in the drafts, and then we have an editor who's Kevin Culp, Pirate Cat on Ian Mode.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then we've got a layout guy, and I tend to handle the art side of it and just send out art requests. So I'm kind of a central point man, but I don't do any of the actual writing myself, and nor would I want to.
Now, at the same time, too, as EM World, there has pretty much become the focal point of, it's like it's called the unofficial D&D website. You've been there basically to see everything from the early D20 days up to now, until the 4th edition. What's the biggest thing that you've noticed between those two times, between 3rd edition and 4th edition? What's the biggest thing you've noticed?
Mechanics-wise, you mean? The game itself?
Well, the game itself, more so with the fan reaction, and even too, just, like on third-party publishers, and just how, everyone has kind of reacted and responded to it. What's the biggest thing you've noticed?
Well, from a fan's point of view, which I'm sure most people would agree with this perception, there's a lot more division this time around. 3.5, pretty much everyone was on board. Diehard stuck with 2e or older versions, but 3.5, pretty much everyone was on board. This time we've got arguments, flame wars across the internet. I have at least a couple of friends who I'm fairly sure have not actually played 4e, but I wouldn't have to swear to that, who periodically rant at me about how much they hate 4e, which I find quite bizarre, because I'm not trying to sell them a copy of the Player's Handbook or anything. It's fine. Hate it. That's all right. I'm off to play it. You go and play whatever you want to play. No problem. But, it's very, very divisive, I've found.
Yeah, it's very interesting, too. Now, with Pathfinder that's out there nowadays, do you find that that's actually kind of augmented it even further, or has it even branched off into another division where now you've got 3E versus 4E versus Pathfinder? Or is it basically...
No, I don't think so. I think what Pathfinder's done is help reduce the tensions a little. From a lot of the 3.5 players' point of view, now 3E is not exactly supported, but fairly close to being supported by a Pathfinder, as long as you're happy to play Pathfinder, which is similar enough to 3E that a lot of people are. So what's happened is a lot of the anger that they're saying, well, this game that I've spent all this money on is no longer being supported. I think they're thinking, well, it is kind of being supported now. So I don't need to rant about 4E quote so much. I don't pretend to speak for other people. I don't know what's going on in their minds. But since Pathfinder came out, I think the arguments have reduced.
Yeah, no, it does seem where everyone has... it was almost a kind of an outrage, it seemed, that... especially too, like for example, if I turn around and look at all my 3rd edition books that I still have displayed on a shelf, there was, I guess, a sense of disappointment of, oh, they've all just basically gone out the window, because when 2nd edition came out, it was basically a tweak of 1st edition. 3rd edition became a huge, massive overhaul of the system, and I think people were expecting 4th edition to just be another tweak of 3rd edition, and as you mentioned before...
It turned out to be a new game,
exactly.
A new edition, in fact. I think the same thing. If I look at my 3.5 collection, it's a fairly large collection, but for at least 2 years before 4e came out, I pretty much stopped buying 3.5 stuff. I mean, the source books were getting ever more and more specialized. I didn't need them. In fact, the last campaign I ran for 3.5 was the Age of Worms adventure path. And we actually decided to do that with the core books only. 3 books, no splat books, nothing. And it ran perfectly. It was brilliant.
Now, this also brings up the Annie Awards, too. How about you give us a little bit of a history on that all came about? Because that's basically turned into the Oscars of the RPG industry.
They have done very well, haven't they? That's largely because of Denise Robinson, who's the business manager of the Emmys. Back in, I can't remember which year it was, we're talking about 8 or 9 years ago, Denise contacted me and asked me, do you want someone to handle this for you? Someone who's got some contacts, who's happy to talk to the publishers, who has some experience in project management, organising events, large-scale events, conferences, parties, that sort of thing. So, I know what I'm doing. I'm happy to do it. And, of course, there's the boys that the Yetis don't make any money, so, you know, she was happy to do it for free. And for the last few years, she's been shuttling the NEDs through, and they've been going up and up and up. The ceremonies have been getting better with PowerPoint presentations and slideshows and things like that, things we couldn't have dreamt of, you know, 10 years ago. So she's done really, really, really well. So this year, I think, is her 10th year. I think she plans to step down this year.
After all those years.
Stepping into her shoes will be Gertie Barden, that and the boards. She's been working in various roles for the NEDs for the last few years, so she's, you know, she pretty much knows how it works. She's very efficient, very organised, very, very good at doing it. And generally, there's been a trend, I think. I mean, obviously, it started off as a D20 award system years and years ago. These days, it's a general RPG award system. So there does tend to be a general drift towards generalisation, which I like. It makes them more interesting, gives them more scope and depth.
Yeah.
Especially since D20 doesn't exist anymore anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
Much of an award ceremony, would it?
You could probably just hand out, like, the classic Lifetime Achievement Award for
D20. Oh, yeah, hopefully I'll be there next year.
Yeah,
I very rarely get to go to Gen Con, but hopefully I'll be there for the 10-year anniversary, although they might make me stand on stage and say something, which I hate.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, then everyone who's listening right now, when Morris actually makes it to Gen Con, you have to get him to stand up on stage and to give a speech.
Absolutely everybody.
Yeah, there we go. There's going to be a round of applause. Everyone has to clink their glasses. There we go. So, sorry.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
Yes, yeah. Sorry, I'll put you on the spot like that. I do appreciate for the interview, but I couldn't turn that out of opportunity. You guys are also working on something that you call Space Fight. Why don't you tell us a little something about that?
Let me say you guys, it's really just me. It's just kind of a personal sort of little project of my own. And the reason I'm doing it is, years and years ago, back when I was at school, we used to play a game called the Star Trek Tactical Combat Simulator, which had a hex grid and counters and a rule book and things like that. And we used to love that game. And I revisited it about 6-7 months ago, dug it out, had a look through, and thought, it's not as good as I remembered. And I think what's happened is over the last 15-20 years, we've kind of become spoiled by a lot of developments in gaming. And some of the things in that book just look so clumsy and awkward to me. And I think, do you know what? I think I might be able to do better. So why not give it a try? Put my money where my mouth is, try and design a good Starship combat game. And I think it's coming along well. It's not a high priority, it's a personal project, but it's coming along well, I think.
Well, now, and that's something, too, that because you have a big push going on at the moment for community supporters for EN World.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's something where you're offering basically kind of a preview, kind of like, you know, a grounds-up view of the Space Hulk game, among some other things. How's that going with your supporter drive, as it were?
The ground-up view of the Space Fight thing is not something I've never tried before. I think other people have done. But what I'm doing is essentially developing it in public so people can see me develop it, offer comments, suggestions, criticisms, you know, a third, fourth, tenth, and twelfth set of eyes as well to spot mistakes. And that's proved to be a really fun process. You know, people offer their opinions. It's nice to see people are actually looking at it, reading it, really thinking about it, rather than just, you know, glancing at it. So, for me, that's adding a little motivation in the development process, where people come back and say, I like this, I don't like this, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm finding that helps me personally immensely.
And how is it going with the community supporters, as far as, like, you know, garnering more? Because I know that a big objective for you is to reach 1,000 community supporters. How's that going along so far?
I still have hopes we'll do it. I don't think we'll do it by Christmas, but I think we'll do it shortly afterwards, but that's close enough for me. The idea for doing that was prior to the introduction of this, which was 3 months ago, we had yearly, three-yearly, and so forth, convenient supporter accounts, where people didn't really get anything. I mean, they got access to the search function, but they didn't get anything substantive. And also, the yearly thing just made cash flow such a big issue for the site. Because what you really need is the stuff coming in every month. So what I did was switch it all over to monthly, and that has really, really, really helped the cash flow situation. Now I've got a predictable, regular amount coming in monthly. I can look at how many subscribers there are at any given time and know how much is going to come in next month. And that has just made life so much easier. It's one of those things where I think, why didn't I do that 10 years ago? Why am I just doing that now? But hindsight is 2020, is the thing. So yeah, it's going well.
Good. Good. Now, what are some of the perks that are coming with the community supporter account? Why don't you take a little moment here to pimp your site, as it were?
Sure. Well, the big one is, of course, the Burning Campaign Garden. By subscribing, you subscribe the entire Campaign Saga, 12 adventures, you get the 4.0 version and the 3.5 version. So whichever edition of D&D you're playing, you're covered. There's Space Fight, obviously. There's a whole load of great stuff donated by other publishers, such as this stuff. There's the Core Advantage PDFs, which look great. Cobalt Quarterly is giving us a special Christmas EML subscriber-only edition of Cobalt Quarterly, which we're going to have available there, and they're going to continue providing articles throughout 2010 for us. Other than that, there's going to be plenty of EM publishing products going up there over the next year. It's looking good. There's going to be a lot more stuff, and I'm always thinking of ways to improve the accounts as well.
Well, actually, I know I'm looking forward to that, and I know you guys and your site in particular has been a huge boom to myself over the years. I mean, there's various other sites out there that you can provide news to, but I mean, really, when it comes down to it, I know about one quarter of the traffic that comes to my own website. It comes through EN World in some way, shape, or form. And I know for us to help contribute in any way, shape, or form, because we donated a couple of PDFs for the community supporters. I know that EN World has been a huge part. And I know it's been like that for a lot of other independent publishers too, where it's been a huge resource that's open and fair. You know, like everyone gets equal space, and anyone who stands out, you know, they're able to stand out on their own merit. So I know for myself, that's been the big thing with EN World, and I just wanted to give a great big thank you for that. So,
well, thank you. It's really nice to hear people say that sort of thing. Definitely makes it worthwhile when people turn around and say, you know, I really like the site, thank you. It's really a pleasurable thing.
Well, there we go then. Everyone happened that we get to end our nice little interview with a big hug, so there we go.
A big Christmas hug, huh?
A big Christmas hug and a Yuletide cheer.
A big Christmas hug.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks very much, Russ. I do appreciate this. And,
Not a problem, anytime.
Yeah, keep us posted. Feel free to, anytime you want to plug anything that's coming up for EN World, EN Publishing, or any of the other 17 things you're working on at the moment, by all means, feel free, let us know.
Yeah, I've really got to start working on things.
That's right.
In fact, I've got to go and do today's news now. A cup of coffee, sit down and do it. So, yeah, that's been great. Thanks very much for having me on.
Oh, well, not a problem.
And have a great Christmas as well.
Yeah, you too, Russ, and Happy New Year if I don't talk to you before then.
Thank you very much. You too.
All right, see ya. And now back to the show. Thanks to Russ for doing that. That was actually great. In fact, he actually went through a lot of trouble on the day of the interview. There was actually a massive amount of traffic when he was on his way back home, so he had been delayed, but he was really great about it. He had made a promise and he really kept up on it, and this is really good, especially too for doing an interview like that for a little guy like us. But he's, like I said in the interview before, he's been really great with independent publishers and being able to give them a voice and being able to include them at the same level as the big guys. You know, even in the days of the D20 glut, when pretty much every single person who happened to have a computer and internet connection was trying to put out PDFs of some kind or another. So that's really great that he did that. But anyways, enough sucking up. Let's move on with the show. Let's go now to our bulletin board. We've got a couple of things here to let you guys know about. Bulletin board, as I mentioned before, is people who are looking for playtesters to do a beta test of character builders, map maker programs, and that kind of thing. And any open calls that we happen to come across. And the first one we have is actually for something that's going to be called the Book of Winter. There's a guy who on the EM World Forums calls himself Dragonstar, and he is looking for some contributions for something that he calls the Book of Winter. Now, this is going to be a charity PDF going towards the Toys for Tots program in the States, and he's actually looking for 4th edition material with a winter theme to it. Obviously, it's going to be coming out around November 1st of this year, 2010, that is the plan. It's an open call that's available for professional and amateur writers. There's no limitations to the types of submissions, so if you have a piece of fiction, comics, list of spells, feats, all that other kind of stuff, go right ahead. It can also have a winter holiday theme, so if it's got something kind of Christmassy related. I know a popular pastime is to come up with stats for Frosty the Snowman and Santa Claus and all that other kind of stuff. So by all means, they're looking for anything like that. So if you're looking for details on how to send this in or any more particulars, you can go to the link that's actually on our CA Live page on emeraldpresspdf.com/combatadvantage, and you'll be able to find the link for that there. And next and last on our list for the bulletin board is one that I'm going to personally implore all of you to check out, because he has actually promised a Mac version. I work on a Mac. I touch exclusively Macs. I have nothing to do with PCs. It's long-winded, and my therapist says it's not worth getting into. But the fact that someone's actually actively working on a Mac program, rather than anything that's open format that uses Java or something, is actually very exciting. So that's why I'm personally imploring all of you who happen to care to check this out. It's a little combat PC monster management program called Familiar. He's been beta testing it now for about a couple of months or so. The link you'll be able to find once again on the CA Live page. And it's actually been getting some really good responses so far. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to check this out myself, but he's looking for much more input, especially too before he starts getting into the trouble of doing all the programming of converting it to Mac. So for all you Mac users that are out there, something's coming. Hope is on the way. And for those of you that are able to, that have PCs and a Mac, or that are able to portal back and forth between the two of them, check this one out, because it actually does look very promising and it's been getting some good feedback. So that's the bulletin board for this month. If you have anything that you'd like us to put out the word for, anything, like I said, for if you have a playtest for an upcoming product, which we'd like to know about anyways because we're just curious like that. If you're looking for beta testers for a character generator or some kind that you're working on, you know, even just to draw attention to any kind of thing that you're working on that you'd like to get some input or some feedback on, give us a shout, calive@emeraldpresspdf.com, and be sure to put the name of your project in the subject line so that it's easier for us to classify, because we're actually going through quite a few emails at the moment. And there we have it. That actually brings us to the conclusion of our first episode. Seems to be over in a heartbeat, but spend so much time getting ready for something, and when it comes down to actually recording it, it's done in a flash. So thanks everyone for listening. I hope you actually enjoyed this. I hope you found something useful out of it. We've got more coming up. We're going to do this once a month for about a half hour at a time. On our next episode, we've got Chris Diaz from Diaz Ex Machina Games. And he's going to be talking about the Amethyst setting. Now, this is taking 4th edition and applying modern science fiction settings to it. This is something that a lot of people have been waiting for a while. And I'm going to break the news to you guys right now. CA15 actually has an exclusive preview of the rules. They have a little bonus module coming out called Biohazard that allows everyone to actually play with the rules and experiment with them, so look forward to that. That is just a week away. It is releasing on January the 19th. Once again, if you want to check out the rules for this, and they're actually really kind of cool, you know, you'll be able to find them from us before you can even get it from the publisher themselves. And that one is actually due to come out in April of this year, being gone to print through Goodman Games. And speaking of which, also in CA15, we're also going to have a couple of little tongue-in-cheek articles, something we were working on. I know one of the big retracting statements about 4th edition is that it's too much like World of Warcraft, and that it's very heavily simulated to represent video games, which clearly dominate the gaming market over tabletop role-playing. So we thought we'd actually take that one step further and embrace it much more openly. So we have a couple of nice little, they're humorous in some regards, but they are totally practical and can easily work in any existing campaign. So we've got some video game conversions for 4th edition in there as well. And we've also got an interview with Night for the Night Rain campaign setting that's also going to be coming out. They've got a sneak peek of the heroic tiers for their 5 new classes that just hit the shelf. We've got a link to that as well on the CA website. And we've also got a special an artist spotlight on Kieran O'Gorman. He's actually a good friend of mine. He plays in my group. Amazing, incredible artist. I only wish that I could afford the level of work that he is able to produce. It's just absolutely amazing stuff, and you should see even some of the doodles that this guy does just on the fly, just, you know, while he's actually playing in between turns. So anyways, that's what we have coming up. My time is wrapping up. The clock is ticking. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys in a month. Later.